This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 218 to 219. From the chapter Al-Baqarah from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parhizgar.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Innalladhina amanu walladhina hajaru wajahadu fi sabilillah. إن الذين آمنوا والذين هاجروا وجاهدوا في سبيل الله أولئك يرجون رحمة الله أولئك يرجون رحمة الله والله غفور رحيم يسألونك عن الخمر والميسر قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس وإثمهما أكبر من نفعهما ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو وكذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Surely, those who believed and those who fled their home and strove hard in the way of Allah, these hope for the mercy of Allah, and Allah is forgiving, merciful. They ask you about intoxicants and games of chance. Say, in both of them, there is a great sin and means of profit for men. And their sin is greater than their profit. And they ask you as to what they should spend. Say, what you can spare. Thus does Allah make clear to you the communications that you may ponder.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Hamas officials say bodies of scores of Palestinians have been found in Gaza's Al-Shifa hospital after Israeli forces withdrew from the barricaded medical complex. Israeli forces killed a Palestinian man over a stabbing attack that left three settlers seriously injured in the southern part of the occupied territories. Also in the headlines, Turkey's President Erdogan concedes local elections setback, calls poll results a turning point for his ruling Justice and Development Party. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mews. Thanks for joining us. It is almost 6 months since Israel launched its genocidal war in Gaza. The regime's warplanes and artillery keep pounding the besieged strip, causing more deaths and destruction in the last 24 hours. Four civilians, including journalists, were killed and 16 other people injured after Israeli warplanes struck the vicinity of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in central Gaza city of Deir al-Bala. Several areas of Gaza city were also shelled and bombed, leaving two people dead and 10 injured. Meanwhile, four Palestinians, including two children, have died due to starvation in Kamal Adwan Hospital in the northern strip. The number of deaths related to famine and malnutrition has gone up to 34, including 31 children. Nearly 32,800 Palestinians have lost their lives and some 75,000 injured in the Israeli war on Gaza that began in early October. It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. Gaza's health ministry says Israeli forces have retreated from the Al-Shifa hospital after weeks of siege on the medical complex. The ministry says dozens of bodies were found at the medical complex after the Israeli pullout. According to the ministry, the facility is completely out of service after the regime burned it down. The Gaza governorate says more than 400 people have been killed in the area since Israel began its attacks on the health facility on March 18. Israel imposed the siege on the medical facility under the pretext that Hamas operated there, but the resistance movement has dismissed the allegation. Mutaba Musaba is our correspondent joining us from Deir al-Bala to give us the latest on the genocide that's occurring, and also Mick Napier will break it down for us. He's the co-founder of the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign, who joins us from Edinburgh. Okay, welcome to you both, to you, Muti. Tell us what you have for us today. Of course, we know of the massacre that has taken place, that has now unfolded, with all the, bodies that have been retrieved, the dead bodies. Tell us about that, if you can, also.
Actually, this is the most important news that we have today, which is about the withdrawal at the retreat of the Israeli occupation forces from the Al-Shifa Medical Complex and the surrounding areas of the Al-Shifa Medical Complex. Massive and unbelievable destruction unfolded after the Israeli tanks withdrew from those areas. We are talking about roughly two consecutive weeks of the brutal aggression that touched and reached everything there, according to the eyewitnesses and according to the people there and the medical staff and the civil defense crews, that the entire buildings inside the Al-Shifa Medical Complex were completely or partially destroyed, in addition to those buildings that were set on fire by the Israeli occupation forces. The entire complex were reduced to a mass grave that included hundreds of the Palestinian dead bodies, according to the medical staff and the civil defense crews, that at least 300 Palestinian dead bodies were found ubiquitous in those areas inside the buildings, inside the complex and outside the complex. They found a plethora of the Palestinian dead bodies, handcuffed and blindfolded. They were executed in cold blood by the Israeli occupation forces. What the people found this morning is the real meaning of the barbarism and the brutality of the Israeli occupation forces. They are talking about unbelievable scenes of the massive destruction that reached everything, including the infrastructure and the residential buildings and the roads and the pipelines. Everything was destroyed by the Israeli occupation forces. The people were the main target of the Israeli occupation forces. Those dead bodies actually include the children, the elderly, and the women, the whole people, who particularly who were stranded and who were besieged inside the Al-Shifa Medical Complex. They were tortured. They were found stripped down by the Israeli occupation forces. As I've mentioned, they were blindfolded and handcuffed, and they were executioned by the Israeli occupation forces. Needless to mention that even the surrounding areas of the Al-Shifa Medical Complex, the entire squares, the horizontal squares there, were completely destroyed by the Israeli occupation forces. Entire squares were wiped out by the Israeli relentless and continuous airstrikes that lasted for roughly two consecutive weeks of ceaseless attacks and the chronic gunfire and shelling and the airstrikes that destroyed all residential buildings there. The people there can barely identify their residential apartments and houses because, as I've mentioned, they were completely destroyed, and the Israeli occupation forces rendered that area to be an unlivable place. It is the manifestation of the vengeance of the Israeli occupation forces towards the Palestinian people there. However, when it comes to the other areas of Gaza Strip, the Israeli occupation forces continued their airstrikes and attacks against several areas of Gaza Strip. Here in the central area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli artillery maintained its shelling, particularly towards the northern part of the city of the central area, including Al-Amal town, which is located in the northern part of the central area of Gaza Strip.
Thank you for that, Mutsu. We do appreciate it. Well, McNapp here, I'm kind of at a loss for words here, because when I heard what our correspondent there said, it is quite shocking. We continue to get shocked by this genocide that's unfolding. I mean, this is happening in real time. He mentioned how there were 300 bodies that were recovered. There were many that were blindfolded. Amongst them were women and children, and these are people that were trying to take refuge inside the hospital. So this is just really, it obviously defines the word genocide that's taking place. What are your thoughts on what you just heard from a correspondent in terms of what has happened at the Al-Shifa Hospital?
My thoughts are very similar to yours, that the horror is building upon horror and deeper horror every day. And one finds it difficult to find words. And your reporter, who does a fantastic job, has to be congratulated for finding the words to describe and bring to us the horror of what's happening. I mean, given what's going on, and given that America has decided to continue to send more bombs to Israel to drop on Gaza, it's clear that as the price we paid for decades and decades of crime against the people of Palestine, slow motion genocide over a very long time, this was an open vein in the surface of the world. and it was bleeding horribly. But given that this has taken such a long time to come to this horrible climax, it seems to me that the price we are paying for allowing this to happen for decades is that Israel is dragging the world into a new era of barbarism, a new darkness. Now, the world since 1945 has seen terrible wars, millions dead, killed by America, all around the world. But this is new. This is something where the Israelis dare to do this on live TV, to live stream their terrible killings. And it seems very much that they want the world to know that this is what they are capable of. And I think there is a horrible logic to this, because Israel is really tiny. It's 6 million probably Zionist Jews killing Arabs because they're Arabs and surrounded by Arab countries and other Middle Eastern countries who know what's happening. And I think the ferocity of the killings, the genocidal violence, is caused by two reasons. One, that they know that they don't have a long-term future, that ultimately 250, 300, 400 million people in the area can prevail against 7, despite their modern technology. And there's a sense of this at the back of the Israeli mind. But also they got such a fright after, during October the 7th, when the Palestinian resistance they thought was defeated, was broken, could easily be contained by their huge military superiority and an air bridge of bombs from Washington and also some from Britain and Brussels. They thought that they could manage the situation, and it's clear that they can't. This has become a worldwide phenomenon, and Israel is fantastically isolated and despised. Even its allies hold their noses, and even the British government has now started to talk about stopping arms sales to Israel, and it's entirely because of huge demonstrations, shutting down arms factories by activists, escalating activity because of the horror. So the price to be paid by British and other governments in terms of public opinion is very high. But I just share your words when you ask me the question, how can you find the words day after day to describe dogs eating the bodies of Palestinian children, surgeons amputating their own children's limbs without anesthetic, horror piled upon horror, and Israel continues to do this. But the price that Israel pays is forever. I mean, I think Israel has sealed its own doom. I don't know when it'll come, but you cannot survive as a country like this, which could officially change its name from the State of Israel to the Genocidal State of Israel and put that on the plaque at the UN, because that's how everybody now sees Israel. So what can we say? The Palestinian resistance is not defeated yet. Netanyahu went in for a quick victory. That quick victory has eluded him, and it's producing a political crisis inside Israel itself. So I think, to sum up, I think that the Palestinian resistance, the Israeli genocidal violence, is eating away at the support for not just Arab regimes, but for regimes around the world which are complicit in this genocide.
Thank you. We do appreciate it. Thank you for that. That's Moti Abu Musaba talking to us there from Darabala. We appreciate it. And I'd also like to thank Mick Napier from the Solidarity Campaign in Edinburgh. Thank you. And with that, we come to an end for this news review. From the Gaza Strip to the occupied West Bank, where Israeli forces have shot and killed a Palestinian man over an alleged stabbing attack at a settlement near the town of Ashdod. Israeli sources say that at least 3 settlers have been seriously injured in this attack, which occurred in a shopping mall. According to the reports, regime forces fatally shot the attacker, who was later identified as a man from Al-Khalil. The incident came hours after the Al-Hassan Brigades, the military wing of the Hamas resistance movement, republished a message from its commander calling on Palestinians to use all of their resources to fight against the regime. Hamas later hailed the attack as a natural response to the occupation's massacres in Gaza and the West Bank. The group added that the operation also shows Palestinians' conviction toward resistance as the path to liberate Palestine. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement and Israeli forces continue to exchange fire as tensions remain high over the war in Gaza. In the latest of such tensions, The Lebanese resistance has carried out several retaliatory operations against Israeli positions in southern Lebanon. This after an assassination drone assault targeted a vehicle in Lebanon's southern town of Konin. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh has the details.
The most dangerous aggression today from the Israeli side was that an Israeli drone targeted a vehicle in the southern town of Konin. And we're talking about an assassination, it seems. We know from reports that there was one person in that vehicle. And that has become part of the Israeli policy of targeting individuals, which could be members of either the Hamas. As you know, Hamas is active in Lebanon. It does have a branch here in Lebanon, and they are active in South Lebanon. We also see that the Israelis are targeting, when they do have intelligence, they're targeting some vehicles that include members of Hezbollah. But in times, there's also targeting of civilians in their vehicles as well. Hezbollah has made it, of course, clear that they will continue to retaliate for the continuous Israeli aggressions. And there were several operations today. Hezbollah targeted the post of Jordah. They targeted specifically, they said, the espionage devices in that post. They also targeted the Zibdin post and Ruwaisat al-Anam, which has become a routine operation for Hezbollah, targeting the occupied Lebanese Shabab farms. We also saw today targeting of a recent post, which is called the Barakta launching site, where the Israelis keep their tanks and their artillery, and they launch their aggressions from that area. And Hezbollah mentioned in their statement that this is a recent post, and this shows that Hezbollah, that the Israelis are attempting to move away from their original post, perhaps trying to stave off any Hezbollah operations. But Hezbollah seems to have the intelligence to be able to know about these recent posts and target them as well.
Israeli forces have carried out fresh strikes on Syria, targeting the vicinity of the capital, Damascus. The Syrian military says the rockets were launched from the direction of the occupied Golan Heights. It added that the aggression resulted in the injury of two civilians, causing some material losses. The attack comes 2 days after the regime's fatal airstrikes on Syria's Aleppo killed a number of civilians and military personnel. The Syrian government has, on numerous occasions, called on the UN to force the Israeli regime to stop its acts of aggression. Damascus says the assaults are in violation of international law, aimed at propping up terrorists. On to news from Turkey, where the Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has acknowledged his party's poor performance in Sunday's local elections, calling the outcome a turning point for the Justice and Development Party, also known as the AK Party.
We will open-heartedly analyze the results of the March 31st elections within our party and make our self-criticism boldly. Although not finalized yet, the election results show us that we are experiencing a loss of ground in local administrations across the country. Of course, we will discuss the reasons for this decline we see on the local basis.
Erdogan issued the statement after early results squashed his party's hopes of winning municipality and mayoral seats in Istanbul and Ankara and some other traditional strongholds. The opposition Republican People's Party has already declared victory for Ekrem İmamoğlu, the incumbent mayor of Istanbul, after 96% of the ballot boxes were counted. Partial official tallies also showed the CHP was leading in other big cities. Sunday's local elections appear to represent a fresh blow to the president, who has set his sights on retaking control of urban areas. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah,
who allowed none to witness when he created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when he authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing him. Terence fall low in awe of him. Faces are humbled in fear of him, and everything mighty yields to his mightiness. So to thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may his blessings be upon his messenger endlessly, and his salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for thee. I ask thee concerning the complaints of thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among thy servants, of a handmaid from among thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask thee, O he who owns all objects of need which are granted by his will and hastened to his desire, that thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willest, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
Martyrdom of Imam Ali, peace upon him. In the name of God, the All Merciful, the All Compassionate. Salam and welcome to the program. Heartfelt condolences to all our listeners on a very tragic day. In fact, today is that fateful day in history which saw the end of the only instance of the administration of social justice with the martyrdom of the commander of the all true believers, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, the cousin, son-in-law, and divinely designated vicegerent of the Almighty's last and greatest messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Before we present you a special program on the tragic 21st of Ramadan, here is Ayah 15 of Surah Hujurat, where God Almighty says, "The true believers are only those who have attained faith in Allah and His Prophet and have never doubted, and who wage jihad with their possessions and their persons in the way of Allah. It is they who are the truthful." We are once again commemorating the martyrdom anniversary of the barometer of belief, the fulcrum of faith, the paragon of the pious, the epitome of eloquence, the byword of bravery, the manifestation of magnanimity, the symbol of sincerity, the jewel of justice, and the excellent exemplar of the administration the like of which the world has yet to see. The grand man who passed away on the grand night of Ramadan continues to transcend history and all historical developments, despite the passing away of a millennium and four centuries since the day when struck on the head by the poisoned sword of a cowardly renegade, while engrossed in the ritual morning prayer of the 19th of the fasting month, he expressed those immortal words: "Fustu wa Rabbul Ka'bah, by the Lord of the Ka'bah, I have triumphed." Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, triumphed because, as the divinely designated heir of the Almighty's last and greatest messenger, he drew the permanent line between the rule of the righteous and the misrule of the miscreants. Deprived for 25 long years of his right of political leadership of the Ummah, following the passing away of his cousin and father-in-law, the Prophet, he never harbored grudge against the usurpers. Whenever they came begging at his doorstep to resolve the problems facing the Muslims, he readily gave them the finest advice, to the extent that the second Caliph Umar ibn Khattab would say, "If not for Ali, I would have perished." When masses thronged his threshold to take over the caliphate, he refused, and when their pleas increased in view of the critical situation facing the Islamic realm, he reluctantly took up the reins of government to salvage the faith of Muslims, on condition he would rule only in accordance with the laws of God in the Holy Quran and the precepts set by the Prophet, rather than the un-Islamic innovations made by the previous three caliphs. Here is what he said on establishing the model government of social justice: "By Allah, I had no liking for the caliphate nor any interest in government. But you yourself invited me to it and prepared me for it. When the caliphate came to me, I kept the book of Allah in my view and all that Allah had put therein for us, and all that according to which He has commanded us to take decisions. And I followed it and also acted on whatever the Prophet had laid down as sunnah." The famous exegete of the Noble Qur'an, Abdullah ibn Abbas, has narrated, "I saw Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, mending his shoes. I said, 'It is better you spend your time on repairing the social affairs.' He ignored me until he finished with his shoes and asked, me how much the value of his pair of shoes was. I said that it had no value. He insisted that I may price it as it was. I said, well, a fraction of a dirham? Imam Ali, peace upon him, said, by Allah, this pair of shoes is more favorable to me than leading your political affairs, unless I can establish right and eradicate falsehood. In one of his sermons, Imam Ali, peace upon him, elaborates on the concept of jihad, or striving sincerely in the way of God, which ought to inspire the spirit of resistance and the resolve to solve crises in contemporary Muslim societies, which are facing a variety of intricate plots from cultural, social, and economic to wars imposed upon them by the enemies of humanity, such as the Zionists and the US, as well as their minions, the Takfiri terrorists, modern day Khawarij, to which the Imam's assassin Ibn Muljam belonged. The Imam says, jihad is one of the doors of paradise which Allah has opened for His chosen servants. It is the dress of piety and the protective armor of Allah and His trustworthy shield. Whoever abandons it, Allah covers him with the dress of disgrace and the clothes of distress. Beware, I called you to fight these people night and day, secretly and openly, and exhorted you to attack them before they attacked you, because by Allah, no people have been attacked in the hearths of their homes, but they suffered disgrace. But you put it off to others and forsook it, till destruction befell you and your cities were occupied. You have become the target at which arrows are shot. You are being attacked, but you do not attack. Allah is being disobeyed, and you remain agreeable to it. When I ask you to move against them in summer, you say, it is hot weather, spare us, till the heat subsides. When I order you to march in winter, you say, it is severely cold, give us some time till cold clears from us. Alas, despite such words of wisdom, the Iraqis, because of their weak faith, failed to heed the admonishments of Imam Ali, peace upon him, and the result was calamitous for them and the other sections of the Ummah, not just through the seizure of the Caliphate by the Umayyad charlatan Muawiyah ibn Abu Sufyan, but by the several centuries of deprivation they continued to suffer well into modern times. The words of Imam Ali, peace upon him, are a warning to Iranian people, whom God Almighty rescued through Imam Khomeini from the despotic Pahlavi regime and the hegemonic Americans, that if the laws of God are violated, if the sunnah of the Prophet is ignored, and if the precepts of Imam Ali, peace upon him, and the other 11 infallible Imams of the Ahlul Bayt are set aside, on the misconstrued notion of progress on the patterns of the Deccan and West, then the result would be suicidal in the transient world and damnation in afterlife. Therefore, as Muslims, we owe to tread the footsteps of the person whom Prophet Muhammad likened to the Noble Quran, and who left for our guidance the lasting legacy of the rule of social justice. Thus, there are immortal lessons to be learned. not just from the discourses, but from all the actions and deeds of Imam Ali, peace upon him, whose martyrdom we commemorate.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson. This is Palestine Declassified, the only weekly show that's dedicated to investigating and exposing the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In today's show, we'll be covering the growing popularity of Quds Day and the frantic efforts of Zionist extremists to undermine and sabotage it. Record numbers are expected at this year's rallies because the world has been awoken by the unspeakably horrific atrocities being perpetrated by the Zionist entity in Gaza and the occupied West Bank. Latifa Abu Chakra has been looking at the history of Quds Day and the extraordinary efforts by the Zionist lobby to close it down.
Quds Day is celebrated all over the world traditionally on the last Friday of Ramadan. It is a day of international solidarity with the Palestinian people, named with the Arabic word for Jerusalem, the capital of Palestine. Quds Day was introduced in 1979 by Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini. Quds Day was a response to Jerusalem Day, in which Jewish settlers rampage around Al-Quds, which they call Jerusalem, chanting racist slogans including "May your village burn." The Zionist entity heightened attempts to suppress Quds Day after the Gaza massacre between 2008 to 2009. The worldwide revulsion against the massacre led to a significant rise in support for the Palestinians and worldwide protests. Quds Day is marked throughout Muslim and Arabic countries in over 80 Islamic and non-Islamic countries in total. In the West, these include the United States of America, Canada, Australia, Germany, Spain, the United Kingdom, France, and Greece. The Muslim unity displayed in Quds Day is a threat to the Zionist entity and its supporters and assets in the West and elsewhere. Accordingly, they mobilized to smear and denounce Quds Day and to claim that its celebration exhibits extremism and anti-Semitism. In the UK, Zionist groups have been attempting to sabotage the celebration for more than 15 years. In the US, Zionist entity assets have gone on the offensive. The Anti-Defamation League denounced Al-Quds Day in 2016 as a hateful demonstration of anti-Israel and anti-Semitic sentiment. In 2022, it ludicrously labeled calls for the dismantling of Zionism as genocidal ambitions. In Germany, Bundesamt für Verfassungsschutz, or Federal Office for the Protection of the Constitution in English, is the domestic intelligence agency. In 2019, it published a deeply racist report on anti-Semitism in Islamist extremism. It specifically singled out Quds Day and denounced a huge range of Muslim political groups as extreme. All were labeled with the Zionist-created notion of Islamic anti-Semitism. The report openly states that German intelligence spies on peaceful and legal Muslim activists, so long as they're defined as Islamist, a racist term which effectively covers any Muslim active in politics. The temporary Zionist entity continues its onslaught of ethnic cleansing and murder in Gaza and throughout the region. Complicit Western governments continue to try and repress pro-Palestine sentiment, But this year, the celebrations of Quds Day go ahead in a situation where support for Palestine is at a historic high as the result of the genocide in Gaza.
Joining me in the studio as usual is our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and is now a senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul's AM University. He's also a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch, and is a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. Our guest contributor today is Nazim Ali, who joins us via Zoom. In his professional life, Nazim is a pharmacist, but he's also a passionate pro-Palestine campaigner, and it was his activism that brought him to the attention of the Zionist lobby. These extremists subjected him to a seven-year-long malicious hate-filled campaign and pressurised the General Pharmaceutical Council to strike him off. Thankfully, the despicable ploy to destroy Nazim's career and deprive him of his livelihood was rejected. Welcome to the show. Nazim, what's been your experience of Quds Day in the United Kingdom?
Hi, Chris. Hi, thanks for having me. It's been very interesting. I went to the first one in 1988. It's a very inclusive protest that occurs every single year, as Latifa said in the prequel there, on the last Friday of every Ramadan. We actually have it mainly on a Sunday in England because of it's a weekend. Probably the safest annual rally ever in the history of the United Kingdom, without doubt. I don't know of any arrests. If anything, the arrests happened with the counter-protesters. It's unique, actually. It seems to galvanise the far-right, i.e. the BNP, etc., and the Zionists to come and protest against us together. So it's one of the only few processions where you'll get the counter-demonstrators having a Union Jack, having a Zionist flag, far-right stickers all over them coming together. So it's helped unite these right, really extreme right-wing groups. But over the years, absolutely peaceful from our side, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, certainly that's been my experience of it. I mean, and I've attended the Quds Day demonstration last year and can certainly endorse everything you've just said there, Nazim. But David, the Zionists, they've been trying to suppress the Quds Day for 15 years, haven't they?
They have. They don't like it, and they don't like it because, of course, it's a militant demonstration and doesn't pull its punches. It says, you know, this is Quds, is the capital of Palestine. It's not the capital of Israel. And, of course, they've been trying in the UK. Certainly it's the case, in Nazim's case especially. But also in the US, where the Anti-Defamation League have been very active. We've talked about them many times on this show before.
Of course, yeah.
And also in that case in Germany, a truly extraordinary case there, where the German intelligence services were actually smearing and libelling pro-Palestine demonstrators as being somehow effectively Nazis. And this is the kind of the stuff you get from the Zionists, of course. We've seen this on many, many occasions in many episodes of the show. This is what they do. They want to stop any possible expression of support for Palestinian rights.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nazim, I mean, how does Quds Day then differ, would you say, from other pro-Palestine marches?
I mean, I think its origin, its origin story, I think is really important. Again, as Atifa mentioned, it was initiated by the late Ayatollah Khomeini. And it differs in the sense that it does come from a real political base. It comes from a point of no compromise with the oppressor. It comes from a very anti-colonial standpoint, and it's very strong on that. And it's all about freedom, and it's all about removing the chains of colonialism and oppression. Understanding the fact that Palestine is the key. So wherever there's oppression going on in the world, wherever there's colonialism still in its various forms existing, if we can unlock the situation of Palestine, it will unlock every other puzzle that's going on. That's the uniqueness of Quds Day, and that's why it's so important. And come rain, wind or shine, Chris, in England, it takes place. Doesn't matter if it's because it's in Ramadan, it changes 10 days every year. So we have it when it's snowing. We have it when it's hailstones, thunderstorms. We've never cancelled except in COVID. And then we went online.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, David, I believe you're speaking at this year's Quds Day demonstration in London, aren't you? I mean, that kind of demonstrates, doesn't it, the sort of serious politics of the organisers, wouldn't you agree?
Well, it does. I mean, since I've won my case at Industrial Tribunal, I've not had a single invitation to speak cancelled, which is unusual. Before my tribunal judgment was released. Most meetings that I was invited to were cancelled, or indeed sometimes there were attempts by pro-Palestine campaigners to cancel my meetings as well, not just the Zionists, incredible, but also people from the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, its headquarters, have tried to stop me from speaking at PSC branches. But this is an indication, really, that, that the organisers of this demonstration are serious, that they're serious about their anti-Zionism and about not compromising with Zionism. Zionism is a form of racism. It's a genocidal ideology. Everybody can see that now, and we should have nothing to do with Zionism. Zionism is something which should be challenged, and we should be moving towards an eradication of Zionism as a racist ideology. And not all of the pro-Palestine movement, I'm afraid to say, would endorse such politics.
No, we do. And we talked in this show, haven't we, about the need, really, for a de-Zionisation process to basically eradicate this kind of racist ideology from the country and indeed from the world. But Nazim, I mean, what's your assessment of the Palestine Solidarity movement today? I mean, David just mentioned there that you know, previously when he's had speaking engagements, he's had objections indeed from the Palestine Solidarity campaign. I mean, what's your thoughts about that today?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we know there's always been a history, especially in the UK, of certain organisations infiltrating other organisations and trying to change the narrative. And as David's just alluded to, it's imperative we stick to the anti-Zionist narrative because there's a lot of blowback from it, especially when we are being absolutely determined to take on Zionism. It causes a lot of consternation among certain people and a bit of fear of the blowback and the potential of consequences, whatever they are, that people and organizations feel. And, you know, some organizations don't want, and I mean this respectfully, if I can, don't want to be tarred under the same type of label as other organizations, et cetera, et cetera. Bit of a cop-out, if you ask me. But I don't think there's any space to compromise when it comes to Palestine, when it comes to talking about far-right ideologies like Zionism. We've got to be out there and we've got to put it on a plate and serve it.
Mm-hmm. Well, David, I mean, you know, despite the 15-year-long campaign by the Zionists to try and destroy Yakud's Day, I mean, the actual demonstration's getting bigger and bigger every single year. And as I've said in the introduction, I think we're expecting record attendances at the demonstrations this year. What do you think that says?
Well, it says that the movement for Palestinian liberation is on the march and that it's rising, its support for it is rising across the whole world, including in countries like Western countries where the governments are supporting the Zionist onslaught on Gaza. But the population is becoming more and more radical in support of the Palestinians, and Quds Day is a kind of cutting edge of that. And we see the increased consciousness that there is in the country, and the increasing inability of the Zionists to stop this kind of campaigning. And so we have the situation where we looked at this the other day, just in the show, where the government is trying to step in and to divide the movement by labelling some parts of the Palestine Solidarity Movement as being extremist. Now, of course, this is going to fail, but it's as an indication of the threat that they face, that they feel that they face from the Palestine Solidarity Movement.
Mm-hmm. And Nazim, the attendance at the Quds Day demonstrations is incredibly mixed, isn't it? Very diverse attendees, a big Jewish contingent, for example, I believe. Is that briefly? I mean, that's true, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's a very family-friendly protest. A lot of children come along with their families, with their parents, and we have a large contingent of Jewish people, especially rabbis from the Neutral Carter movement, as well as other Jews as well, who come, anti-Zionist Jews who come to the procession. In fact, it's very multi-faith, and people of no faith attend as well. And even from the speakers list, if you go back historically, is a big variety from the far left to people who are more sort of religious, coming from a religious perspective, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, very, very diverse.
No, indeed. We'll come back in a moment, Nazim, to our discussion after our next report about the truly astonishing lengths that the Zionist lobby went to in their efforts to ruin the career of our guest, Nazim Ali.
The London pharmacist Nazim Ali has finally won his long-running legal battle against Zionist regime proxies. It all started in 2017 when Nazim Ali spoke at the Quds Day rally.
Zionists complained about his anti-Zionist comments to the police. The Crown Prosecution Service refused to press charges. The Zionists took a private prosecution that was eventually stopped by the CPS. They took out a judicial review against the CPS and lost. In January 2019, Ali's professional regulator, the General Pharmaceutical Council, said there was no case to answer, but gave him a warning for being offensive. The CAA then bullied the regulator into reversing its position in July of that year. The council concluded his words were not anti-Semitic in November 2020. But the UK lawyers for Israel joined the campaign against anti-Semitism to continue to harass Ali. In December 2020, UK LFI complained to the body which regulates the regulator, the Professional Standards Authority for Health and Social Care, or PSA. The intimidation worked, and the PSA took the GPC to court, at which point the GPC folded and offered no defense. The High Court then sent the case back to the GPC, which made the absurd determination that two of Ali's remarks were objectively, if unintentionally, anti-Semitic. However, it gave him a warning as before. The Zionists were still not happy and appealed to the court to get Ali sacked. In March this year, the court declared that there was no case to answer. This is a historic and hard-fought victory. But who are the Zionist groups who have bullied and intimidated the professional regulators into such submission? The campaign against anti-Semitism took up the cudgels first. The CAA is a creature of the Zionist regime. It was set up to attack the pro-Palestine movement with fake anti-Semitism allegations. Much of its early funding came from the Jewish National Fund, the racist land theft group, which is one of the four so-called national institutions in Israel. The UK Lawyers for Israel is a group which appears to have been set up under the auspices of the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Its whole purpose is to use lawfare tactics to manipulate the law and bully British institutions into doing its bidding. The case tells us how foreign agents of the Zionist regime can harass, bully, and intimidate so effectively that they can, in effect, occupy the professional bodies regulating the profession of pharmacy. This is what state capture looks like. It also tells us that people can fight back and win. In fact, this is one of a number of recent victories against the Zionist movement. The tide is turning.
Well, congratulations on your historic win, Nazim. I mean, it must have been a great relief to finally resolve this, what can only be described as a nightmare.
Yeah, absolutely. 7 years long. And, every point, every part that we won, they would come back. And the interesting thing is, Chris, a lot of this didn't cost any of these campaigning organizations, the Zionist ones, any money, apart from the judicial review, if I recollect correctly, because they've been pressurizing, the powers that be to take these cases on. In this last one, I think it's important to know that as they lost, they had to pay, the PSA has to pay costs. It had £43,000 of its own costs and £13,000 of the GPHC's costs to pay. So that's all going to come from a government fund. And that is taxpayers' money, £56,000 just to get me struck off, which they failed to do, which makes no sense when the GPHC committee, Fitness and Practice Committee, have been well within their rights to find a determination that they found. And they found me that a warning was ample enough. So questions need to be asked, really. What made the PSA take this back to the High Court at expense of the taxpayers' money?
No, indeed. Well, questions certainly do need to be asked. But, David, what do you make of Nazim's case? I mean, it seems absolutely crazy, doesn't it? That he had to go through, four different processes, numerous different processes, actually, involving seven, in fact, separate organisations between the Zionists, the police, the courts and the regulators. I mean, what does that tell us about the nature of the Zionist lobby?
Well, it tells you that they intend to intimidate, bully and harass any organisation that gets in their way, and they intend to be able to occupy those organisations. So as Nazim has been saying, these were organisations which did it off their own bat. They, The Zionists didn't even have to lift a finger in some cases, because the organizations took each other to court and fought like rats in a sack to more effectively implement the Zionist organization's wishes. So what we have is not just an occupation of these regulatory bodies, the regulator of pharmacists and the regulator of pharmacists, not just occupied, but effectively captured by the State of Israel and doing the bidding of the State of Israel, which is currently engaged in a genocide. This is no way to run any kind of democracy, and it shows the way in which the hostile foreign power, which is Israel, is able to actually get inside regulatory bodies and to turn them against the purposes they're intended to be there for.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of unbelievable vindictiveness, isn't it? It's astonishing. It really is. But Nazim, I mean, how has this long and drawn-out battle affected you personally and of course, professionally as well?
Yeah, quite badly, if I'm honest. You're not used to seeing your face on the center spread of the Jewish Chronicle front page, being called a preacher of hate, terms like Islamist being used, and they do it deliberately. So all the way from the right-wing press in the UK to the right-wing press in America and in Israel itself. So if anyone was going to work with me and Google my name, as which people do these days, all this stuff comes up. So it's all planned. It's all done in a very methodical way. The way they release the news, it first comes in the more Zionist press, and then it comes in the mainstream press 2-3 weeks later. It follows a set pattern. And of course, it affects your mental health. It affects your well-being. It affects your relationships. It affects everything and your place at work. Just to give you a side thing on that, funnily enough, where I work, they contacted every non-brown named person, individual, back in 2017, saying, you work for an anti-Semite, how do you feel about it? But they didn't contact anyone with a brown-sounding name, which shows where they're coming from, really. But yeah, it really does take it out of you. But thanks to friends, thanks to supporters, thanks to people like yourselves who've gone through what you guys have gone through, you know, that energy helps to stand up and fight the fight, which we have to do collectively.
Well, you know, the old maxim, unity is strength, is absolutely apposite here, and it is so important. And I know from personal experience how crucial that is, actually, that kind of solidarity from, you know, grassroots supporters. So I can certainly relate to that. And I'm pleased that you felt that was something that helped you through what must have been an absolutely appalling ordeal. But, David, I mean, what do you make of the committee's judgment then that, they said that they could discern no reasonable or persuasive connection between Zionists and Grenfell, that, you know, that the Jewish Chronicle headline highlighted there, and thus the remark must be anti-Semitic?
Well, I mean, first of all, the idea that a committee can decide whether something is anti-Semitic on the basis that they can't see what the connection with the Zionist movement is completely absurd. They need to get out a bit more and to do some more research. But, of course, what are the connections between Grenfell and the Zionists? One, that ministers in the government are all Zionists, the Conservative Friends of Israel, they're all members of that organisation. But more importantly, Arconic, which is the company which provided the cladding, its top shareholder is an organisation called Elliott Management, run by a guy called Paul Singer. He's the top donor to the Friends of the Israel Defense Forces. One connection. Two connections. Arconic is an organization which is a construction company, which also is engaged in constructing F-35 fighters, which are being sent to Israel to bomb Palestinian children. Mm. Two connections. It's not my fault. It's not anybody else's fault that they can't perceive this. But there is a connection between Grenfell and the Zionists. And we can point this out with many, many other examples. So, and we should not be scared of saying that. It's not anti-Semitic to say it. There are connections between the Zionists and all sorts of appalling things which go on in the UK, including Grenfell.
Mm-hmm. One thing about the Zionists, they never let the facts get in the way of a good old-fashioned smear, do they?
Well, that's right. I mean, as everyone has now been saying, they lie and they lie and they lie, and that's the way.
Yeah, indeed. Well, Nazim, as far as I'm aware, there's been absolutely no media coverage of your historic win. I mean, why is that, do you think?
Well, it's almost, they've got custard pie in their face, haven't they? 7 years, 7 years of chasing me left, right and centre, going through the courts of various bodies, 7 different organisations you mentioned. They've got nothing to show for it at the end, apart from what was determined back in, you know, 2020, a warning. So it's been, like I said, a waste of taxpayers' money, a waste of time, It's shown how vindictive they've been towards me. Like I said, you know, financially it's been a big burden on me. Emotionally, health-wise, it has been as well. And it just shows the nastiness of them, of the Zionist movement, how vindictive, nasty, and pretty much evil they are. That they just used everything they could that actually didn't affect them financially. As David made a great point there, they got people to interfight on their behalf, which is, you know, amazing. But who wants to admit failure? And that's what they would have to do, admit failure, because they were all gung-ho about, yeah, we're going to get him struck off, we're going to get him struck off.
Yeah, yeah, no, indeed. I mean, well, as I say, I mean, you're through it now, thank goodness, and, you know, you've prevailed. And thankfully, as we were saying, you know, you've got that grassroots support and solidarity to help you through what must have been a terrible ordeal, and you've won. And I think everybody will be, all right-thinking people anyway, will be absolutely delighted that you have got through it, and you've got through it, you know, relatively unscathed, notwithstanding what you've already said, but you're here and you stand victorious. So, you know, congratulations again on that, Nazim. But unfortunately, that's all we've got time for today. So thanks for watching, and thank you to our guest, Nazim Ali, and, of course, our resident expert, Professor David Miller. Remember, you can follow the show on Facebook, Twitter and Telegram, where we post regular clips and updates. You can also help us to counteract the disinformation peddled by the corporate media about Palestine and the resistance to the Zionist entity by showing today's programme on your social media platforms. So until next time, when Palestine Declassified will be back with more forensic investigations and analysis, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is IRIB English Radio's Viewpoints. I am Hadi Saravi, your host. This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Viewpoints. I am Hadi Saravi, your host. Qadr and its nights are among the important times of the year on Muslim calendar. Although the literature around these nights are rich and a lot has been said and written, these nights are still mysterious and many aspects and values of it are still truly unknown to Muslims across the globe. On this episode, we try to shed yet another light on it. I would like